C1R, number 13B.
Now we have read the text of a paragraph, and we have seen that there are many important and interesting statements in it, many, and they are very often of quite a different purpose, of a different aspect. And therefore, because within one paragraph you have so many different aspects that you may like. See, somebody may have liked perhaps the last sentence very much, that angels announce to the wise men of old this dual appearing, and angels whisper it through faith to the hungering heart in every age. Somebody may just be touched by that very much, because perhaps that student was perhaps in need of something, was perhaps depressed, and really was asking for an enlightenment, for a soft, nice, encouraging message, and therefore angels perhaps would be to him that which he feels. They always come and whisper to me something, and they will help me, and they will bring me out of the situation. So somebody may have been attracted by that very sentence very much, and forgets all what was in the other sentences of that paragraph. Somebody else may be very much attracted by the statement that Jesus was the highest human concept of the perfect man. This interested him, perhaps. You see, a statement that says, oh yeah, here I know now what Jesus was. He was really a human concept, but the highest human concept of the divine idea, and this attracts his attention. Well, these are already two statements that don't seem to have anything in common, wouldn't you say? They have nothing in common. Or somebody else would be perhaps attracted by something else. What shall I take here? Yes, perhaps by that truth casts out error, and said, well, that's what I really want. I really would like to see all the error cast out of me. So truth is that Christ that casts out error. Another statement that doesn't seem to have anything to do with the other two I mentioned. Did I put that correctly? Clearly. So out of one paragraph, if you take out isolated sentences, then we never get really what the whole paragraph wants us to show. Though we stick to the letter and don't even muddle with the letter. We take the sentence just as it is. But picking out individual sentences would never give us, so to say, a line of reasoning through the whole book or through a chapter or through such an answer. It would be quite fun, actually, you know, if one would have lots and lots of time to take such a small text as here, the answer here, that's only nearly 2 pages, and would once take out of every paragraph that sentence which appeals to us most at the moment, and then show how those ideas flow from one paragraph to the next, and you wouldn't find any kind of a line of reasoning. Not any kind of line of reasoning. And that is, you see, what happens practically with the reader of Science and Health. He reads sentences, and he has his pet sentences, or he has his individual subjective touch of what is said. He likes some aspects better than other aspects, and so he concentrates on that what he likes, and not so much on what it is actually said as a whole subject, and therefore he never gets a line of reasoning. Is that clear? What is the answer? The answer is that we culture ourselves in the art of seeing in a paragraph not that which we like best, but to see what is the core of that paragraph, what is the central point of that paragraph. Because the central point perhaps we could bring out in a very short sentence, but in order to make it plausible to the reader, Mrs. Eddy has to talk around this central point and elaborate it and approach it from various angles, repudiate various suggestions and false concepts that the reader may have. And so in this way, perhaps the center, the pith of a paragraph may not be seen. Now, John Dolly somehow out of the blue, one never knows how he got it, because he certainly didn't get it from other sciences, suddenly began to use a very, very scientific method, a terrifically practical scientific method, namely the art of epitomizing a subject. Be it the epitomizing of a whole tone of mind, or epitomizing subtones or so, the point is, can one see in a larger text, but however large that is, that text, can one see always the pith of that text, and therefore reduce that text to that pith, and formulate it in a short epitome. If one learns that art, then you can read the textbook very easily, if you learn that art. But it's an art. It's not so that everybody just on its first go can do it. It needs some kind of a spiritual training and reasoning. And naturally, it needs a lot of spiritual tonality of the system, because if we want to bring out the pith, it is always, so to say, something that has to do with the categories, therefore with the system. So let's try if we could do that. We have here that very first paragraph. I said I take now this whole text for that kind of work. We take now here this paragraph where each individual sentence, so to say, picked out and contemplated alone, would tell us always something different. It would tell us something that angels whisper. It would tell us something that Jesus is the highest human concept. It would tell us something about the truth casts out error. And how to put these three together, that's an enigma. You can't, because they are not really the main point. In order to bring out the main point, we don't have always to pick out just a rendering or something like that, but to think out by reading the paragraph and pondering the paragraph and asking oneself, now what is really the main point which she brings out and around which she writes a whole paragraph? Well, here I think we could see that she tells us something about two things, namely about Jesus and Christ, telling us really that Jesus was inseparable from the Christ, but that the Christ was the divine idea of God, and as that divine idea of God, Jesus, as the Christ, could demonstrate his control over matter. In this way, you leave out all that about the angels whispering, because that hasn't anything to do with the pith of it. That's just the garnish. Just as if you have a nice plate at lunchtime, you see, with a good beefsteak, and then you have a little bit of garnish that makes it a bit more bit prettier. You have to give some kind of a touches, a human touch, a touch of giving hope and encouragement and so on. But the subject that is really being brought out here is, well, if you ask, is it important to understand this explanation in order to heal the sick? She answered, yes, Jesus actually had control over matter. He actually could heal them. But why could he do that? Why could he with truth overcome error? Because he was inseparable from the Christ. So in this way, you see, you try to find out really the central point. And then what you should do is always to have paper and pencil next to you. And if you start then writing down, say, for every paragraph, here you would write down for the paragraph running from 15 to 25, you see, and then you write for yourself just a little note, perhaps not even a whole sentence, or perhaps a sentence, sometimes perhaps just two or three words as keywords, and you write them down, because as you go along and you come from paragraph to paragraph, you begin to realize that there is a line of reasoning in it, which we only get this way. So here, perhaps we could say that what we have written down on the illustrative material on page 5, perhaps that we epitomize this paragraph like this, that Jesus, inseparable from the Christ, demonstrated his control over matter. So that would be the starting point. It would show us somehow that Mrs. Eddy answers that general question first through Jesus, and say, that's what she does so often. She first gives, so to say, the exemplar to say there existed once a man who was a scientist and who proved it. And therefore, if he proved it, we have an exemplar, and therefore we have a chance that if we understand what he did, that we can do it too. So her authority in healing usually goes back to the Bible and to Jesus. And so first he showed that Jesus could really heal. But she didn't say how and so on. So we go further and investigate the next subject. The next paragraph reads like this. Sickness is part of the error which truth casts out. All right, that's something different. But still showing that there is something that can heal, namely that truth can cast it out. Error will not expel error. See, she gives another reasoning for the first sentence in order to say error can only be cast out by truth. Therefore, this second sentence, error will not expel error, is so to say an addition to it, a further explanation. It doesn't give really a further information. It is just supporting that first sentence. Because if error is cast out by truth, then certainly not by its opposite. So, but because the belief is that error can cast out error, she also brings it in as a support for the first sentence. Christian Science is the law of truth. So she says that truth is explained through Christian Science, and Christian Science shows that law of truth which heals the sick. What does Christian Science show how that truth heals the sick? Now something else comes in on the basis of the one mind or God. And so we have a great new statement, namely that that truth not only casts out error, because that she has already said on line 16, that it is the truth casting out all error. So if she says that again on line 26, it's not a new information. It's a reminder, but not something new. So you expect that she will say something new about truth casting out error. And therefore she says, yes, there is a law in that truth. And Christian Science explains that law and explains what that truth casts out error and heals the sick on the basis of one mind or God. This is something new that she hasn't said before. That truth casting out error does it through a channel, namely through mind, the divine mind. Why does she have to say that? Because truth casting out error is a general statement, and that's true, but we individually will never experience it. We individually will never experience it until we have that truth in mind, until we are conscious of it, if it is a state of mind, capital M, and therefore not the state of thinking that truth will cast out error. That's why she adds right away, it can heal on no other way, since the human mortal mind, so-called, can you see the juxtaposition? The divine mind, the opposite is the human mortal mind, is not a healer, but causes the belief in disease. So, what is now the new insight into that healing process, truth casting out error? The new insight is now that truth casts out error through the divine mind and never through the mortal mind or through human mind, that the human mind is never a healer. So we can say, oh, this is now a new insight, this is a new point. So perhaps we would take our pencil again and would write down under the preceding epitome, we would write down now here from 26 to 31, Mrs. Eddy shows what? That truth heals through mind. And I have a new point. Perhaps you could have added, truth heals through mind, not through human mind. That would have been nice too. But it would not have been an additional information, but just a new, how could you say, just another aspect, huh? Another angle. See, when I say a new, this is not a new information, under information I mean always that what cybernetics means under information, namely something that has not been stated before. So all those things that have been stated before are no more information. Only that which is something new is considered to be information and therefore adds to the information tank. So we can see here again how we could be sidetracked. You see, if we just would have a certain kind of leaning towards some sentences, we could have said, well, this is terrific what she says here, that error will not expel error. And she says it in plain words. I think that's really the main thing, that error will not expel error. And you could have written down, error will not expel error. But it wouldn't have touched the core. Can you say the core or the pith, you say that, of a paragraph, huh? The center, of a paragraph, because she doesn't talk around that. You can see that she only uses that to introduce the subject, in order to introduce that not mortal mind, which is error, can expel disease. So it was an introduction of error and truth, and now she begins as a new information to say, now what is that truth? That truth is the divine mind. That truth is not mortal mind. That truth is not the human mind. You cannot heal through the human mind, like mesmerism and hypnotism and so on and so on. You see, they would heal through what Quimby called the truth, but really transferred through the human mind. He was also declaring the truth, but through the medium of the human mind. So here she lifts it to the point and said, can you see, truth deals through mind. A great statement that she will bring out over and over in the textbook. That it really is the remedy of truth that needs the medicine of mind. Yes. Then we will go on to the next paragraph and wonder now, what do we get further? Then comes the question. It's very interesting. Then comes the question. You see, why does then come the question? I mean, there must be a logic behind it if she says, then comes a question, which means after what I have been stated, there must come another question. So referring back to the preceding paragraph in which she has shown that mortal mind is not a healer, then she comes and says, but how do drugs and hygiene and animal magnetism, you see, heal? So if truth heals through mind and not through the mortal mind, how then does animal magnetism heal? How does then really other means than the divine mind, like drugs, hygiene, heal? Why do they heal? This is a logical sequence. It's a logical question that comes afterwards. It is like if you would say to any outside of Christian Science and say, look here, you know, it is actually only truth that heals through the divine mind. There is no other healing but that. And he would say, but how do the doctors heal? Why do the pills heal? Why do drugs heal? That's a logical sequence. But if you say mortal mind doesn't heal, then why does mesmerism heal? Why does animal magnetism heal? Why does drugs and hygiene heal? That's a logical question. And so she must answer that. It may be affirmed that they do not heal. That's the very first point. Very brave statement saying they do not heal when the whole world is full of doctors and pharmaceutical industries and pharmacies and so on. They do not heal, but only relieve suffering temporarily, exchanging one disease for another. So that's her reasoning and her answer at that point. Actually, it's a very short answer which would ask for many, many buts and whys, but she doesn't answer all the buts and whys because she has spent a whole sub-chapter, namely in the sixth chapter on medicine, and there she has explained fully all the question that could come up here, which says, well, medicine just exchanges one disease for another disease. It just really does away with the symptoms, but does not away with the disease. And all these questions, actually, she can't again repeat. That has taken about 20 pages in the sixth chapter. So she has naturally some kind of a right not to go again into every detail, and really rely on the fact that the reader has read the chapters before. So we know that, so we don't have to discuss that metaphysically. We know that, therefore, any healing that is not based on the truth healing is not the real healing. It's just exchanging one disease for another, just pushing off an issue, just perhaps healing the symptoms, but not really the cause of the disease. All that we know, so we don't have to discuss it. It doesn't really belong in here. The point is another one that she wants to bring out. She says, we classify disease as error. Here you have now the classification. That's a great statement. You know, we read this and just say, we classify disease as error. You see, yes, it's natural. Well, that's not natural. That's a terrific new paradigm, you see. Nobody in all the world, up to Mrs. Eddy, has done that. Nobody. They all have said disease has to be classified either as a disease or has to be classified as the will of God, and you have to accept it and suffer it out. They classified never as an error. They may have classified as very uncomfortable and unhealthy and painful, but never as error. This was something quite terrific. And as we can see, if we classify it rightly, namely as error, we find an answer to it. Because we don't stall there and say, well, disease is just painful, full stop, well, suffer it out by saying it's error. Error is always the opposite of truth. The world knows since centuries that error is being destroyed by the truth, and that truth can destroy error. So she really did a big job here. And so we classify disease as error, which nothing but truth or mind, can you see again those two? Truth or mind, because truth heals through mind, can heal. And this mind must be divine, must be a capitalized term, mind, not a human mind, and not human. Mind, capitalized mind, transcends all other power and will ultimately supersede all other means in healing. All other means in healing. So in order to heal by science, you must not be ignorant of the moral and spiritual demands of science, nor disobey them. See again a sentence that actually is not the piece of the paragraph. This is a reminder of the whole chapter on Christian Science teaching. There she showed that healing in Christian Science has its moral and spiritual demands on them. Moral ignorance or sin affects your demonstration and hinders its approach to the standard in Christian Science. Again, a reminder of the moral qualification which he has shown in the 13th chapter. It's a reminder. And one has to see what is a reminder, what is a side note, what is a nice cozy touch that she gives, a comforting touch, and to see what is the core of the teaching.